Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air. 3w.realworldradio.fm.
Today we have some bad news from the county of Lancashire on the north of England, because there the government has recently given green light to a fracking project. To speak about this situation is online with us Jamie Peters, anti-fracking campaigner who works with Friend of the Earth England, Northern Ireland and Wales. Jamie works with the communities at the front lines of the fracking struggle and helps them to stop industry. He has mainly worked in Lancashire and Yorkshire in the north of England, where the fracking industry is currently focusing its efforts. Hello Jamie, welcome to Real World Radio.
Hello, nice to speak to you.
Nice to speak to you as well. Can you describe the context in which this decision to allow fracking in Lancashire is taken?
Of course, maybe it would be useful if I just go back a few years to talk about how fracking started in the UK and where we are now. So 5 years ago in 2011, a fracking company called Quadrilla, they tried to frack in the north of England near a place called Blackpool. Now, the country didn't know much about fracking back then, but really got their attention because these two fracks that took place, they actually caused earthquakes in the north of England, which created some news headlines around the time and actually led to the British government bringing in a two-year moratorium, a temporary ban on fracking after these earthquakes took place. And not only did the earthquake sort of shake the ground in Blackpool, they also sort of shook the communities up and made them realise that fracking was something that they should start to investigate a little bit and they should start to pay attention to. So what happened since Quadrilla fracked over 5 years ago in Blackpool? Communities started to investigate and find out, what is fracking? What does it really mean? What does it mean to us? Has it happened to other places in the world, and what's happened there? So they started to do their own investigations. They found out very quickly that it had happened in other places around the world and it brought a lot of bad news there. So then they started to organise in their own communities to speak to neighbours, to speak to other places where fracking had been occurring. And they created sort of frack-free groups, and they created an anti-fracking movement, which has got stronger and stronger every year. Now, the British government had a two-year moratorium where they said they were going to investigate fracking and see if it was safe. After those 2 years, fracking companies then started to put applications in. And Quadrilla, the same company, they applied to have two sites in Lancashire, in the north of England, fracked. Now, the communities there, they really organised. They put in planning objections to this to say they didn't want it to come to their community. They did a lot of work legally on planning, as well as putting on events and speaking to as many people as they could about fracking. And they had a great success last year where their local council, the elected officials in Lancashire, they rejected the applications to frack. That's how the planning system works here. Our local councils make these decisions based on planning applications. And they said no to fracking in Lancashire for two different sites. So that was last June. And I was involved in that, and the people living beside these two potential sites, they were just overjoyed that they managed to beat the oil and gas industry, because think of all the money the oil and gas industry has in these communities. Really, it's a David versus Goliath type situation, and they won. So they were delighted. However, once they won, the government a few months later then says, actually, if a local council rejects fracking, we're going to get central government to decide if it should go ahead or not, which is just an outrage, completely anti-democratic. So we waited for the government to give their decision. There was an appeal from Quadrilla, the fracking company, a public inquiry, and then politicians in London, one decided that actually these sites in Lancashire, they should be allowed to be fracked after all, even though the elected officials in Lancashire said no. So that happened in the last couple of weeks, which was hugely disappointing, very unfair, very unjust, but not unexpected. The British government have said for a few years that they're going to go all out for shale gas, that they're going to do everything they can to help the industry. They're going to give them generous tax breaks. So they've been helping the industry as much as they can. So that's where we are just now with fracking. But the last time any fracking actually took place was way back in 2011 in the north of England that caused those two earthquakes. So the fracking industry, even though they're getting so much help from the government, they're even overturning local democracy, they still haven't fracked anywhere and there's still a huge amount of resistance. But that's where we are just now with fracking in Lancashire.
I've heard about the case of Quadrille and the earthquakes, and is it possible it was the company itself that recognized that these earthquakes were caused by fracking?
Well, there was one earthquake that happened,
yes?
And then 6 weeks later, a second one happened, and it became apparent that, yeah, Quadrille did know that it caused an earthquake, but they continued to frack anyway until they were halted. So the fracking industry doesn't have a very good track record. People don't really trust them. They don't trust that they'll follow any regulation. And the regulation that we do have is inadequate. So yeah, you're right. There was earthquakes that took place, and Quadrille later admitted it was down to the fracking.
Yes, but my point was because sometimes people who defend fracking say that you have no proof that it caused the earthquakes. But I was reading some time ago that in that case, the company stopped for a while making fracking, and they recognized that the earthquake was caused by themselves, by fracking. Is it right?
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
I see the Quadrille themselves recognized that their activity caused the earthquakes, and that was caused by the fracks, and they continued after a few weeks and then caused another earthquake. So you're absolutely correct in what you're saying, and the industry now tries to not talk about earthquakes but to talk about small tremors and seismic activity. They don't like to talk about earthquakes anymore, even though we all know that's what it is, and we've seen that not just in England but in other countries.
Yes, and what activities are economic activities are being done above the hydrocarbon deposits? Do you have agriculture or I don't know what's being compromised? What other activities, for instance, do you have sweet water resources that can be compromised by fracking, or do you have some renewable activities that can be destroyed by exploiting non-renewable resources?
Well, there's a number of risks that fracking brings, not just to Lancashire, but to the whole country. Mm-hmm. And one of them, which you correctly mentioned, is our water reserves. Mm-hmm. For parts of the country, fracking, if it was to go ahead, it would be going through water tables, which is incredibly risky and not something that we would at all want to happen. The UK government have changed legislation, and they've not protected our sort of precious water supplies from fracking. The industry say it can be done safely, but we believe it can, and we've seen evidence from other countries where it's failed, it's contaminated water. Mm-hmm. So across England, water contamination is a huge worry, specifically about Lancashire. We're worried about the economic impacts that fracking would have on two of the biggest sectors in the area, and that's agriculture and tourism. Mm-hmm. We don't believe that people want to go on holiday if there's fracking there. We don't believe that people want to buy produce if it comes from land that's been fracked. And those two industries are really important for hardworking families. They're important for jobs in Lancashire and of course the rest of the country. And fracking, I believe, is a direct threat to that. We want nice produce and we want nice tourism, and fracking would threaten both of those. And then we look, as you mentioned as well, at renewable energy. The north of England's got huge potential to bring jobs, to bring energy security to the country by renewable energy. And for all the money that the government wants to invest in fracking, that's going to be taken away from the renewable sector. So there's a lot of worries about it. I'd say water contamination, I'd say the jobs that are related to renewables, the jobs related to tourism and agriculture. And for that reason, we've seen farmers in England and around the world say that they don't want fracking because it's a direct threat to their livelihoods. So that's the case in Lancashire, but also a case throughout Britain and the world.
Yes, and can you speak about the ways that people have to oppose to fracking, like signing one petition for the government to ban it?
Sure. Yeah. Well, for me, the anti-fracking movement is incredibly inspiring because these aren't the people that make up the anti-fracking movement. It's a diverse bunch of people, and they've not always been involved in social activism. They've not always been involved in fighting the fossil fuel industry. The people most close to these two sites, I know them very well, and they've retired recently, and they were hoping to have a quiet life. So when fracking, they first found out about that, they did their own research, and then they found out the fracking was very dangerous, and they started to, you know, speak with NGOs like Friends of the Earth. They started to speak with other community members, and they started to organise, and that's very typical from around the country. These aren't people that have campaigned their whole lives, they're just normal people who've realised how unwanted and how unneeded fracking is to their communities. They've then started to have weekly meetings, create frack-free groups. They've started to create petitions to take first to their own councils to ask them to ban fracking or to say no to applications, and then nationwide petitions. But we also have people who are protecting the land physically. They're going to camp in places where they think unconventional oil and gas exploration is taking place. We're connecting all the communities around the country, training each other on how to speak with the media, how to write planning applications, how to object legally. So people are doing a massive diversity of tactics on this, and the anti-fracking movement's growing and growing. We now have over 300 anti-fracking groups in the country, and that's fantastic. That number is getting bigger every few months. People are putting on events to tell other people about fracking, they're putting on film showings, and they're creating allies. They're working with people in the medical industry who are saying the fracking can't be done safely. They're working with their local politicians, they're working with national politicians. So there's so many different actions that are taking place in the anti-fracking movement, and it's making us stronger to have these diversity of tactics, because we're going to need all of them to make sure that the industry doesn't start in this country. And we've done so well to stop fracking for over 5 years. Fracking was supposed to have taken place 5 years ago. So this delay wasn't planned by the industry or the investors or the government, and it's completely down to local people who have done things like send letters to the council, who have done presentations to their local politicians, and more importantly, who've grown a movement. The movement for anti-fracking is the most exciting movement to be involved in just now, and it's winning.
Yes, right, perfect. Now, one last question to end is what the anti-fracking movement is like there in the UK?
It's a very diverse movement. We've got people involved in the anti-fracking movement because they care deeply about climate change and don't want a new fossil fuel industry to start. We have people that are worried about the health of their families and the threats that fracking could bring for that. We have people who have seen what fracking's done in Australia or USA, and they want to get involved and been stopping it through planning or stopping it through legal work. We have students involved trying to get banks to divest from fracking. We have a real mix of folk. We've got an anti-fracking nana group, which is like grandmothers against fracking. Friends of the Earth brought some of the nanas to the United Nations climate change talk. And some of the campaigners involved in the anti-fracking movement in Lancashire, they hadn't done anything beforehand in terms of activism, and then they've grown to be leading anti-fracking anti-fractivists in their own community. And then last year, some of them actually came with Friends of the Earth to the United Nations climate change talks in Paris to talk about fracking and to hear from other activists from around the world, from Africa, from USA, from Argentina, to really connect. So now they're international campaigners against fracking, whereas a few years ago They didn't know anything about it. So I think it's amazing to see how people have went on a journey with fracking and how committed they are to making sure it doesn't come to their own communities.
Thank you, Jamie. It was Jamie Peters, anti-fracking campaigner from Friends of the Earth England, Northern Ireland and Wales. Thank you so much, Jamie, for these minutes in Real World Radio.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Real World Radio, broadcasting free words, building popular communications by FOI.